This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And think about this week. You're on a Friday with much to consider heading into the summer weekend. I'm just speaking personally now, but I thought the last 24 hours have been something like a snapshot collage of the American psyche and the way, actually the ways, we think about crime and how that has all changed since the 1970s. Yesterday, there was the murder of four Marines in Chattanooga by a gunman born in Kuwait. We'll go to Tennessee in just a few minutes to talk about that. But also yesterday, we had the historic picture of President Obama speaking from inside a federal prison about sentencing reform.
Primary driver of this mass incarceration phenomenon is our drug laws, our mandatory minimum sentencing around drug laws. And you know, we have to consider whether this is the smartest way for us to both control crime and rehabilitate individuals.
Can you imagine such a thing back in the 1980s? A president speaking about reform from inside a federal prison? This is how the war on drugs was described by President Ronald Reagan back in 1986 as an all-out global threat to national security.
To send alarm signals across the nation. To our friends in foreign countries, we know many of you were involved in this battle with us. We need your success as well as ours. When we all come together, united, striving for this cause, then those who are killing America and terrorizing it with slow but sure chemical destruction will see that they are up against the mightiest force for good that we know. Then they will have no dark alleyways to hide in.
Back in the days of three strikes and you're out, zero tolerance and the like, you'd be more likely to see a president visit an execution, okay, that's too extreme, or a sentencing than actually visit a federal prison. But not so outrageous when you recall how candidate Bill Clinton interrupted his campaign to refuse clemency as Arkansas governor to make sure that a brain-injured man, Ricky Ray Rector, was put to death so he wouldn't be seen as soft on crime in 1992. Clinton wasn't going to make the same political mistake that Michael Dukakis did in the 1988 presidential campaign when he was assailed by this attack ad.
As governor, Michael Dukakis vetoed mandatory sentences for drug dealers. He vetoed the death penalty. His revolving door prison policy gave weekend furloughs to first-degree murderers not eligible for parole. While out, many committed other crimes like kidnapping and rape, and many are still at large. Now Michael Dukakis says he wants to do for America what he's done for Massachusetts. America can't afford that risk.
But it's clear what America really couldn't afford were the policies that have led to mass incarceration. President Bill Clinton had some regrets this week as he stood before the NAACP National Convention and admitted that his 1994 crime bill locked up too many low-level offenders who didn't deserve the sentences they were dealt.
I signed a bill that made the problem worse, and I want to admit it. And most of these people are in prison under state law, but the federal law set a trend. And that was overdone. We were wrong about that.
Jason Hernandez from McKinney, Texas, was one of those offenders who was swept up in this trend, as Clinton put it. Hernandez was sentenced to life without parole in 1998 on a first offense, crack cocaine and methamphetamine charge. The new trend is sentencing reform, and President Obama has been aggressive in commuting sentences of nonviolent drug offenders. He commuted Jason's sentence in December of 2013. And until the president acted, for 17 years, the justice system had given Jason only one message.
It kind of just showed me that there was no hope for redemption, that basically that my crime was so atrocious that I could never be trusted in society again. And there for a while, when I was in prison, I kind of believed that, because the prison I was in initially, which was Beaumont USP, you know, there's nothing but murderers, rapists and terrorists and gang members there. And I kind of believed that. But over-educating myself and just seeing, running into people that were everybody who had a life sentence were minorities. And I read a book called The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander. And it just kind of awakened me. And I started noticing the racial disparities and how my life kind of went wrong. The justice system, it just kind of threw away the key on me. And luckily, I didn't throw the key on myself, and nor did the president.
And let's talk a little bit about what it feels like to have the key thrown away. I mean, back in the 1980s, the president talked about drug offenders as a threat to national security. You were no different than Al-Qaeda back in the 1980s. And so by the time we get to your sentence, everyone in America believed you were destroying America. That was your crime, right?
Yeah, that was my crime. And I'll be honest with you. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and lie. And it's just like I told the president in the letter that I wrote him and that I tell everybody, my crime was serious. I mean, and everybody says, you know what? You didn't kill nobody. You didn't rape nobody. And I'll be quick to tell them I was a drug dealer, and a drug dealer is a terrible criminal. I mean, you're not only selling drugs, you're selling drugs to the people that you grew up with, your family, your friends, and you're doing it in the community that you were born and raised in. And that's what I was doing. And I'm not going to lie. I deserve to go to prison and deserve to go to prison for a very long time. You know, that I deserve life without parole, a sentence that would result in my death in there. To lock up a criminal, a first-time offender, nonviolent offender at the age that I was, just doesn't make sense. It sends the wrong message. And obviously we know that now because, you know, I come out of prison and there's drugs everywhere. I think the war on drugs, which I kind of refer to as the war on minorities, has increased drug use, has increased people in low-income communities to sell drugs. I mean, when you take somebody's father from them for not only a year or a couple of months, but for 10 years, a decade, or the rest of their lives. I mean, what do you think that kid's going to do growing up in that environment that his father did? I mean, it's just almost like it is the school to prison pipeline. Yeah, we've lost the war on drugs. There is no doubt about that. I mean, and just like President Obama stated, instead of building high-tech prisons and hiring more guards, build better schools, double the wages for teachers. More programs, after school programs for at-risk minority kids.
Think back 17 years. What would have intervened in your life to have made you make some different choices?
More positive role models in my community. I mean, there's no doctors, no teachers, no lawyers where I grow up at. When I look on TV, I don't see people that look like me, that talk like me, are playing roles of an officer, of a judge. Usually the person that looks like me in a TV show or on a movie is going to prison. He's selling drugs. He's using drugs. And for people who think that that doesn't have an impact on a kid whose brain is not fully developed, you know, they're absurd. When a person commits a tragic crime, 9 times out of 10, they connect it to a video game. But yet, when a person is actually living this video game, they don't make the connection. They just automatically assume he's a bad person. They don't look at what created that circumstance and what made him do them acts.
Can you tick off for me just a couple of things that happened in the world, in your family, while you were in prison?
I watched about six to seven of my family members pass away, aunts, uncles, cousins. My son, who was 7 months old when I was arrested, grew up without me. When I was released, he was from 7, he went to 17 years. There's a lot. I just can't even really. Nobody has asked me that question. But
so let's say a year from now, you're in a tough position. You know, you've got some of these struggles, and you know, you're not feeling as upbeat maybe as you are right now, and you're feeling a little angry, and you know, maybe you wish you had some place to turn. If you could talk to President Obama, what would you tell him during your worst moment? Where you feel like, man, this is really hard.
Well, to be honest, John, I just don't think that there could be anything that can amount to waking up every day in prison, going to sleep, knowing that I was going to die in prison. But there are individuals who will probably get out here and will encounter very, very, you know, difficult situations. And I will, too. I mean, I've encountered them. But, you know, if I could tell the president anything about the war on drugs and sentencing reform, is to just keep pushing Congress, keep informing society on what's going on with the war on drugs, how it has been misled, and to not let every inmate go, because that's just impossible. But those that are serving unconstitutional, racially biased sentences that have proved while incarcerated that they have changed, to give them a second chance at life. I mean, that's, you know, basically what America is based on, you know, giving people the opportunity. And like I said, not everybody has earned it, but those who have, you know, send them back to their mothers, to their fathers, and to their children.
What do you say to your son?
I tell him I'm sorry for being ignorant and and being stupid, basically. My greed led to him being raised without a father. And, you know, our bond isn't close. I mean, he doesn't call me dad or father. You know, I'm not mad at him. It's like I said, it's my fault. And it's something that I have to work on. And, you know, I'll start off as his friend. And eventually, I think our bond will be stronger than it could possibly be. It's just something that one of the effects of being in prison for nearly two decades has. But, I mean, it's something I have to live with. And I got to make the most out of it. And I'll make the best out of it.
Jason, it's been great talking to you. I just have one more question now. Just imagine that I'm sitting at a desk and I'm one of those sort of officials who has all the rules. And, you know, I'm a law-abiding American, okay, Jason? And I got a family and I've played by the rules and I pay my taxes, Jason. And all of a sudden, here I am faced with this guy who spent 17 years in prison, who threw his life away on drugs. Jason Hernandez, what do you want?
What do I want? I just want to be looked at as every other normal citizen looks at. I mean, I know I committed a crime and I paid for it. I think I paid severely for it. And I just wanted a chance at life, just to get a job, which I have a job. But, you know, people don't judge me on what I've done on the past, but more on what I'm capable of doing in the future. And I know it's going to take everything for me to prove the naysayers wrong. But all I ask is just for an opportunity to do that. Just give me that chance. And that's all I ask for.
Jason, thanks so much.
Okay, thank you too. God bless you.
Jason Hernandez was sentenced to life without parole for selling methamphetamine and crack cocaine in 1998. President Obama commuted his sentence in December of 2013.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.